InfoTrack, the weekly show with information you should know. Here's your host, Chris Whitting.
Our next guest has a prescription for saving billions without cutting quality. Dr. A. Mark Fendrick is a primary care physician at the University of Michigan and director of the Center for Value-Based Insurance Design, and he says fewer unnecessary tests could mean better care and big savings for Medicare. Dr. Fendrick, your study found Medicare and older adults spend $4.4 billion with a B a year on low-value care. How do you define low-value in your research?
We typically define low-value or unnecessary care are those healthcare services that at best don't make people healthier. And in actually some situations, Chris, it actually causes harm.
What kind of risks can these low-value tests, scans, and procedures pose for older patients?
Well, the first reason why we have this line of research at all is that there have been significant cuts to healthcare spending, both by the public and private sector. And when cuts are made to healthcare, almost always, as a rule of thumb, that someone is harmed by either lack of access, having to pay higher out-of-pocket costs to get those services, or other barriers. It turns out that we wanted to explore a line of research that actually could save money and also help patients. So those services that are used so commonly, even though the evidence base would suggest a lack of clinical benefit or actually sometimes harm, was the reason why we pursued this approach.
Can you describe five of the services that account for a large portion of potential savings?
Well, one of the areas that I think there is common ground in terms of unnecessary care are those services that are given a D rating from the United States Preventive Services Task Force. This is the organization when they grade a service A or B, they're so valuable that there's now a regulation in place that public and private payers have to cover them at 100%, meaning individuals don't have to pay anything out of pocket. This same organization gives a D rating, that is, those services that we should not do. And what we found is the five services with a D rating led to about 60% or $2.6 billion of those savings, with screening for chronic obstructive pulmonary disease and doing a screening of urine for bacteria for asymptomatic individuals being most costly. These, Chris, are procedures that are done in offices across the country, largely due to culture and experience, as opposed to evidence showing clinical benefit for the people who get them.
PSA tests for men over 70 who have no history of prostate issues is also on your list. What's the rationale for not recommending those tests?
You know, in my 30-plus years of clinical medicine, screening for prostate cancer has been the most controversial, and the recommendations have actually flip-flopped from screening all men when I started my practice to recommendations to screen no men when a couple years went by. So it turns out that recently, the recommendations suggest that we have a shared decision-making or a conversation with individuals about the pros and cons of prostate cancer screening, understanding that some people may decide to do it and others may not. But it turns out in men over 70, the evidence is pretty firm to suggest that the harms of prostate cancer screening, the workup and treatment, are actually outweighed by any benefit that might occur. And the experts, which I am not, would say those men diagnosed with prostate cancer over the age of 70 are much more likely to die with it than die of it, even though there are some examples where, in certain situations, people will get aggressive prostate cancers diagnosed at late age. And unfortunately, we can't give the optimal screening scenario for every individual because risk factors for aggressive prostate cancer in that age group are not known.
Our guest is Dr. A. Mark Fendrick. He's a primary care physician at the University of Michigan and director of the Center for Value-Based Insurance Design. We're talking about how fewer unnecessary tests could save a lot of money in Medicare. We're talking about these grade D services, doctor. How much could be saved just by cutting back on these five grade D services alone?
Yeah, we found that about 60% of the $4.4 billion, or $2.6 billion, were responsible by these five U.S. Preventive Services Task Force D-rated services. It's important to point out, Chris, that as Congress and individual health plans and employers struggle with to cover some really high-value services, whether they be clinician visits, diagnostic tests, or prescription drugs. And just about every one of your listeners is aware of the current issues around coverage for these really impressive GLP-1 or anti-obesity medications. And one of the main reasons why public and private payers aren't covering this generously is the cost impact. So I've been trying to work over decades to kind of colloquially rob low-value care Peter so we can pay much more for those high-value care Paul services that currently my patients don't have access to, largely due to financial issues, and do not look specifically at the clinical benefits.
That's a good way to put it. Is there resistance in getting rid of these tests among physicians in general because that would cut their income? Is that a factor at all?
Well, there are many factors why we do things that the evidence would suggest that are not going to benefit patients. Largely, the culture of American medicine, Chris, is more is better. That is how I was trained. Whether the fee-for-service reimbursement that persists among a small majority of practitioners drives that, I don't think it's only revenue and income. I think that we have been trained to do something as opposed to do nothing. And I've been trying to teach scores of residents and medical students over the year, don't just do something, stand there. Understanding it's worth discussing what the ramifications in terms of clinical and economic outcomes might be, but it doesn't mean that we actually have to do everything that's available to our patients in every circumstance at that immediate time. Often, we can delay a particular test or a drug to see if something a little less invasive or a little less expensive actually works.
Beyond the five grade D services, how did you identify the other 42 low-value services?
Yeah, fortunately for us, there has been a significant national movement around identifying those services that don't benefit patients. The U.S. Preventive Services Task Force, as you mentioned, is one of the leading organizations. But we were very fortunate just when we were starting to write about the idea that we need to cut back on low-value services to pay for high-value services more generously. The Choosing Wisely initiative, initially started and run by the American Board of Internal Medicine Foundation, had worked with several professional clinical societies across the spectrum from medicine to nursing and now internationally to have clinicians themselves identify and publish services that are overused. And so we had hundreds of services to choose from, and we chose those either that were most common or those most easily identify from claims paid by insurance companies.
Obviously, we're talking about savings for Medicare. Can you estimate how many of these costs are paid out of pocket by older adults themselves?
Well, I'm really glad you asked that because one of my most notable sound bites is Americans don't care about healthcare costs. They care about what it costs them. So while we should all feel badly about the billions we found in Medicare and maybe the tens or even $100 billion paid by commercial health plans, just these small number of services, the 47 we looked at, we identified roughly $800 million paid out of pocket by Medicare beneficiaries. And as you well know, many Medicare beneficiaries are on a fixed income, and a substantial minority of them self-report that they can't afford the healthcare services that are recommended to them. So I'd love to see the elimination of these out-of-pocket costs for unnecessary care and have them be applied to those services that Medicare patients report so routinely that either they don't use at all, they use less often than indicated, or use them and use less healthy food or don't pay their rent or utilities.
How could these findings influence Medicare policy going forward?
Well, thank you for asking. Most government cuts or cuts in general to healthcare are particularly harmful. And if you look at some recent policies, you'll see that they're what I'd like to call blunt in the fact that they don't distinguish in terms of cutting back on the services that I beg my patients to do or those that I beg my patients not to do. The metaphor I seem to be using is most of these cuts are cutting down a tree at the trunk where the healthy branches, the high value services, and the unhealthy branches, the low value services, are cut to the ground. I'd much rather be a pruner from the top of the tree, Chris, and cut off those low value or unhealthy branches and let the healthy ones thrive, as opposed to some policies that cut the whole darn tree down.
That makes perfect sense to me. As we wrap this up, do you have any last words for our listeners? Perhaps some ways that Medicare patients could spur these changes to happen?
Well, I like to tell people I didn't go to medical school to learn how to make people money or to save people money. And it's my absolute hope, Chris, that the money flows to health as opposed to what's happening now, where money flows to various incentives. And the more we align our spending with the services that make people healthier, and the less we spend on services that don't, we'll all be better off.
Dr. A. Mark Fendrick, primary care physician at the University of Michigan and director of the Center for Value-Based Insurance Design. Doctor, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me on.
There's more InfoTrack coming up. Stay tuned.